In the early morning hours of April 18th, 2016, Missy Beavers, a 45-year-old beloved mom, wife, and fitness instructor, was murdered inside Creekside Church of Christ in Midlothian, Texas. When police checked the surveillance footage, they learned that Missy had been viciously attacked by someone wearing tactical gear and carrying a hammer. Despite the killer being captured on camera, no suspects have ever been identified. It's been just over 8 years since Missy was killed, and investigators are still searching for the monster responsible. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Lavasser. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective, and each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Okay, so as you know by now, after listening to the teaser, we are covering Missy Beavers, a pretty well-known case. And you may be asking yourself, why are we covering this? A lot of people have already covered it before. And it is a deviation from what we do here on Detective Perspective, and it will not be the norm. But I will tell you, I'm fascinated by this case. I have been for years. I have family that live in Texas, specifically Midlothian. And I remember when this case occurred, and many of you have asked me to cover it. This isn't just out of nowhere. A lot of you, since I started the show, have asked me to cover Missy Beavers as well as some other unsolved, well-known cases. And I've stayed away from it. But the difference here is when you're hearing this on audio, it should be April 22nd. And if you're watching it on YouTube, it's April 23rd. And the 8-year anniversary of Missy Beavers' murder has just passed within the last few days. So I thought that it would be fitting to cover it now and to give my perception, my perspective on this case, although there is a lot of information out there already and there's a lot of experts who have weighed in on this case as well. So I want to put my two cents out there and give you some of my observations. And as we're doing the perspective, we will do it at the end again, but I'll probably be giving more insight throughout the episode because there's a lot to unpack and I don't want to save it all for the end. So when we get to certain points, I may go off and cover that specific part of the story at that time because there's a lot of details to go over and I want to make sure that I get them all right. So again, just to reiterate, this will not be the norm here. We're always going to lean toward cases that do not get the exposure they deserve. But this is an unsolved case, and there are many people out there who loved Missy and are still searching for answers, and it doesn't seem like the police are close to solving this case. So it's not going to hurt covering it here and giving my opinion on it, and it only takes that one lead to potentially identify that individual who currently is not known to police, and from that point, it could crack this investigation wide open. So, with that out of the way, let's dive into this week's case. Terry Leanne Missy Strickland was born in Texas on August 9th, 1970. From a young age, Missy was great at making friends. She'd never met a stranger she didn't like, and was always there to offer a supportive hand to anyone who needed it. Following her graduation from Jacksboro High School in 1988, Missy earned a bachelor's degree from Tarleton State University. She then went on to work in the retail industry. In 1998, Missy married her husband, Brandon Beavers. Around that same time, she decided to go back to school to obtain her teaching certificate in special education. Missy dedicated her life to teaching for several years until she gave birth to her first daughter, Hannah, in 2001. She and Brandon then decided that Missy would be a stay-at-home mom and take care of Hannah. Over the next 6 years, the Beavers welcomed two more daughters, Allie and Sarah. Missy loved being a mother more than anything in the world. She gave her daughters unwavering love and support and always encouraged them to follow their dreams. Once all of the girls were past their toddler stage, Missy found a new passion in fitness. She embraced her role as a teacher once more and became a Camp Gladiator instructor, leading classes at Creekside Church of Christ in the 5400 block of East Highway 287 in Midlothian, which is near Dallas. Missy's classes were typically held outdoors in the church parking lot. However, if there was bad weather, she moved things indoors. She would often post about her Camp Gladiator classes on Facebook. It was the perfect way to communicate with her campers about the dates, times, and locations of classes. Missy was scheduled to teach one of her classes at 5 a.m. on Monday, April 18th, 2016. The night before, she posted about the class on Facebook, adding, quote, "If it's raining, we're still training. No excuses, you are gladiators." Just before 9:30 p.m., Missy posted on Facebook again, and she mentioned she was going to bed because she had to be up at 3 a.m. Before she fell asleep, Missy spoke to her husband Brandon, who was away in Mississippi for a long-planned fishing trip. Before ending the call, they exchanged "I love yous." They never spoke again. On May 18th, Missy woke up at 3:30 a.m. as planned. 46 minutes later, she arrived at Creekside Church of Christ. It had been raining that morning, so Missy decided to hold classes indoors. She parked under the awning at the south entrance and began carrying her materials inside. At 5 a.m., Missy's students arrived for class. According to police records, they entered the church and made their way to the southwest corner. When they got there, they discovered 45-year-old Missy lying unresponsive in the hallway. Blood and broken glass were scattered around her. The students immediately called 911. One of the students called Brandon to tell him what was going on. He quickly rented a car and began his drive home, which would take around 9 hours. By 5:10 a.m., first responders arrived and rushed to the hallway where Missy was lying on the ground, still clinging to life. They spotted a pool of blood and broken glass scattered near Missy. They also noted various tools, including a large hammer, which belonged to the church. While paramedics attended to Missy, police officers searched the entire building. They didn't find anyone else inside, but they did find broken glass scattered throughout the church. According to police records, officers also discovered signs of forced entry suggesting a potential burglary. On the northeast corner of the church, they found double doors that had been damaged. Although there was no evidence of anyone passing through them, they were just simply broken. Additionally, there was a metal door on the north side of the building with a broken window. Now, it seemed that someone had entered through this door, possibly reaching inside through the broken window and using the knob or handle to actually open the door. Now, Missy's gray Ford F-150 remained parked under the south awning with the passenger side door and the truck bed lid still open. The keys were also on the tailgate, and there was workout equipment in the back of the truck near the church entrance. Now, what's interesting is that Missy's wallet was on the front passenger seat, her iPhone was on the dashboard, and her handbag was on the floor in the center of the front seat. In addition to all of that, her iPad and her gun were also left behind. Now, back in the southwest corner of the building, first responders continued to work on Missy, but sadly, she couldn't be saved, and she was pronounced dead at the scene. Okay, so let's break down what we have so far, and I will say, I apologize if at the end I repeat some of this. If I do, it's because I believe it's significant. But just off the top of my head here, we have a situation that, to me, screams burglary. This looks like an individual entered this building and was initially looking for something or just, I don't know, sometimes people get a gratification from going into places that they're not supposed to be. But it does appear that this was slightly premeditated, and we'll get into the video. Everyone knows about the video who knows this case. I won't go there now. But just on the surface, as an investigator going into the scene, we have multiple attempts of forced entry. Then we have a successful attempt of forced entry and multiple areas throughout the building where it looks like this individual was breaking into things, potentially looking for stuff. Now, some of you may push back and say, well, Derek, if it was a burglary, And their plan was to take something, look at all the items they left behind. Just in Missy's car alone, I mentioned a wallet, a cell phone, an iPad, a gun, all left there at the scene. I think that's easily explainable. The original intention may have been a burglary, but when this person encountered Missy, probably unexpectedly, those plans change because of what occurred. So yes, you go there with one intent, something goes down that's horrific, and they realize they have to get out of there immediately. And maybe they purposely choose not to take anything that could potentially tie them to the case. So I know there are people who believe that this was premeditated, that this could have been a robbery, but then they go back and forth because it doesn't appear that anything was taken from the property or from Missy. I wouldn't count that as a deal breaker for ruling out burglary. It could have been one thing initially and changed into something else. Now, before we continue on, let's take our first break. Growing up, cereal was one of the best parts of being a kid, but as I got older, I had to watch out for sugar and empty carbs, and that's where Magic Spoon comes in. Magic Spoon has amazing flavors you'll love, but is high in protein and contains less sugar. I've also been drinking more protein shakes lately, and Magic Spoon gives me a way to get my protein in before and after workouts while still eating something that I enjoy. So now, if you're not sure what flavor you would like, Magic Spoon has a variety pack, and it contains all four flavors. So that's cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. It only contains 140 calories per serving. It's high in protein, 0 grams of sugar, keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. Now, as far as my favorite flavor, it's definitely peanut butter. Anything peanut butter flavored in my mind is a win. But if you're someone who likes frosted cereal, you're probably going to really like the frosted flavor. That's also delicious. I do eat that as well. But either way, I think you're going to love all of them. It tastes good. It's crunchy. It tastes just like the traditional cereal you're used to, but yeah, it's a lot healthier. And here's a little side hack. After I'm done eating the cereal, I take the flavored milk, and instead of wasting it, I throw it in my ice cream maker. That's just me, little side thing. You can try it if you like. Let me know what you think. So clearly Magic Spoon is a win in my eyes, and I think you guys will like it as well. So if you want to check it out, go to magicspoon.com/detective and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use my promo code detective at checkout to save $5 on your order. And by the way, Magic Spoon is so confident in their product that it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So remember to start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/detective and use code detective to save $5. I want to thank Magic Spoon for sponsoring this week's episode. Let's get back to the case. Okay, so we're back, and before the break, we talked about whether or not this could have been a burglary, and I think at this point, based on what we know, a burglary is still very much in play, even though nothing was taken. So, soon after all this went down, detectives arrived to begin their investigation into Midlothian's first homicide in 7 years. One of their first tasks was to check for surveillance footage inside and outside of the church. Now, there was no working cameras outside of the church due to a known malfunction. However, the cameras inside the church were still operational, so the detectives reviewed the footage and saw that the killer had been captured on camera. Now, according to police records, here's what they observed. At some point prior to 3:50 a.m., the suspect broke into the church, possibly through a metal door with a busted window on the north side. It's unknown exactly what time they broke in because there was no camera in that area or an alarm system in place. At 3:50 a.m., the suspect appeared on camera for the first time. And from 3:50 to 4:20 a.m., they moved from room to room carrying a hammer, forcing open doors, smashing windows, and rummaging through offices and the kitchen. And it should be noted that the police couldn't determine from the video if the suspect had any weapons other than the hammer. Detectives also noted that the suspect was wearing tactical gear. Now, this included a military-style helmet that can sometimes be bulletproof, cargo pants that are often seen with military members or security personnel, gloves, and a thick vest that was clearly marked police in white letters. Now, I want to weigh in on the gear quickly because I think it's significant, but it can also mean a lot of things. I'm not trying to offend anyone here, but all the gear that you can see in this footage is stuff that can be purchased online very easily, and there's very different qualities of equipment that can be purchased. What do I mean by that? I right now at home have a helmet, a bulletproof helmet. That's a full face bulletproof helmet. That's over $2,000 if you were to purchase it on your own. I also have all the tactical gear, the vest, the police patch, all from work. Actually, you can see one of them right behind me if you're watching on YouTube. But you can also go online and purchase this stuff relatively cheap. The cargo pants, the vest, the patch. It may look like it's a military style vest and that it's bulletproof, but in reality, it's just padded. Same thing for the helmet. If you're going to go buy the helmet, you could buy one that's a couple $1,000, like I said, or you can buy one for a couple $100 that you can buy off an airsoft website that looks like a military style helmet, but in reality, it has no utility. It's more for cosmetic purposes. Why do I bring all this up? Well, you could have completely two different lanes here. You could have a situation where this person has a military or law enforcement or security background, or this person, frankly, is a wannabe. They're a wannabe cop or a wannabe soldier, and they're cosplay type thing, and they just purchased this stuff online because they wanted to go on in front of the mirror and look cool. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to discredit the situation, but that's really what we could be looking at here. And I will say that if someone had used this equipment in the field, it would have fit a lot better. My gear was designed and sized for me. My helmet, my vest, my pants were, you know, they were just bought off the shelf, but everything else was pretty form-fitting because you don't want to have anything too loose that can be caught on something as you're entering a building or as you're going into a situation where people could grab a hold of you and pull you down by your clothes. So everything was pretty tight fitting and it looked like it belonged to me. This gear from the footage, which you'll see, looks like the person is swimming in it. The boots, the vest, everything just looks too big for this person. So it tells me that they were either borrowing someone else's stuff or they purchased this online and they just didn't get the right sizes and it's not custom made. So again, it's just like a generic brand that you can purchase and that's why it looks so sloppy on them. So for me, if you make me choose, I'm leaning towards that option that this stuff was purchased online and wasn't actually being worn by someone who is in that career field, although they could be low-level security somewhere. Some of you have also suggested that maybe it was a woman wearing this gear and that's why it didn't fit her properly. That's also an option, but I will get into that more. I personally think it's a male, but we will dive into that as we go throughout this episode. But I just wanted to touch on the tactical gear because I think one of the reason this case is so popular is because of this footage and because everyone gets to see this killer and how they're dressed. And you just imagine what it would have been like for Missy to be confronted by this person, how scary that would have been. And I think that's why a lot of people gravitate towards this case. Okay, so now that I've talked about that, let's go back a little bit in time here to before this incident happened. At 4:16 a.m., Missy drove into the church parking lot and parked close to the entry door to unload her equipment. 4 minutes later, she entered the church completely unaware that the suspect was inside. Missy walked down the hallways of the church toward the southwest corner. As she entered that area where she was later found, she went out of range from the camera's motion sensor, causing it to turn off, and unfortunately, the subsequent assault was not recorded. After attacking Missy off camera, the suspect walked down one of the hallways, presumably exiting the same way they entered, and at 5 a.m., at least two students entered the church and discovered Missy. Now, as far as this surveillance footage is concerned, we talked about it a couple minutes ago, and we're going to talk about it more throughout this episode, but I feel like most of us feel the same. It's just eerie to see this individual. We know what they're about to do. And to just see them kind of walking through the hallways without a care in the world, breaking things along the way, not really in a hurry, not really with any sense of urgency. It almost seems like they might be under the influence because they have to know that there are cameras inside and yet they don't seem to care. And I do think that the tactical gear was deliberately worn to avoid identification. I think that's what the real intention was to be in something from head to toe so that it would make it harder for law enforcement to identify them. Now, you could take a couple things from that. The fact that this individual knew that there were cameras inside and decided to dress like this could suggest that they've previously been there before. In what capacity? Your guess is as good as mine. I'll also point out that there is a sign outside of the church, closer to the roadway, that indicates there are cameras on the premise. So even if you hadn't been there before, if this person was a stranger, they would have some idea that there were cameras on site. So yes, it is suggestive that the person knew the layout inside and that there were cameras present, but I could also see a world where, because of the signage outside, this person just had some intelligence going into it and knew that they had to cover their face. Now, according to police records, after looking over the surveillance footage, detectives asked church staff to check to see if anything was missing, and they didn't find anything. Detectives also asked if there had been any break-ins at the church in the past year, and there hadn't been. Now, later that day, the Midlothian police held their first of many press conferences to update the public on Missy's murder and what they had learned so far. They also released a 7-second clip of the suspect walking around in tactical gear and asked anyone who knew who the suspect might be to come forward. And it's also important to note that initially, at this point, the police did believe that the suspect was a male. The police went on to say that they didn't know why Missy was killed. It was possible she interrupted a burglary, however, 4 a.m. is an odd time to rob a church, so they were looking into whether Missy's murder was pre-planned. But they also considered the chance that it was, quote, an elaborate random situation. So basically, at this point, they were considering all possibilities. Now, while the police continued their investigation, a medical examiner was conducting an autopsy. And according to NBC, the autopsy determined that Missy, quote, had multiple puncture wounds found on her head and chest. These puncture wounds were, quote, consistent with the tools the suspect was carrying throughout the building. Her cause of death was a head wound. Now, as far as this murder weapon is concerned, the hammer which we all see on the footage, I think that this hammer is highly suggestive that this murder was not premeditated. Walk with me here on this one. If this individual went there with the intent of killing Missy, there would have been a few things I think that we would have seen on the footage. First off, you would have seen this individual possibly hiding at one of the entry points. You would have seen them looking out the windows into the parking lot to see if Missy was arriving or had already arrived. And you would think that if they went there with the intent on killing Missy, they would have brought something to kill her. And it doesn't appear that they did. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the hammer that the suspect was carrying was a hammer that belonged to the church. So this person picked up that hammer after they arrived. And it seemed like to me that it wasn't necessarily picked up as a weapon, but more so as a tool to gain entry to the locked doors and the windows. And so as they were walking around the building, they were using the hammer to break things and pry things open. What I think more than likely happened is that during this burglary, this individual encountered Missy. They maybe heard her coming in, or maybe they just walked into each other. And in that moment, to assault Missy, the suspect used what they had in their hands, which happened to be the hammer. So yes, it's a brutal murder, and it's horrific to think about how this went down. But I do think that the hammer is a critical piece of evidence. We see how the offender is carrying it throughout the surveillance footage, and the fact that that's what they used to kill her, to me, suggests that they didn't go there with the intent on killing anyone. The hammer was just a means to an end. They used the hammer because that's what they happened to have in their hand at that time. I also think this rules out the potential that this was someone who was a professional, that someone who knew what they were doing. Not to be inconsiderate of what we're talking about here, but if you're going to kill someone, there are easier, more efficient ways of doing so. A gun, a knife. Also, again, if it's premeditated, are you going to choose the interior of a building that you know has surveillance cameras? I don't think so. I don't think that'd be the first choice. So there's a lot of little things here that's highly suggestive that, again, this started off as one thing, a burglary, and turned into something else, a murder. Now, before we continue on with this case, let's take our last break and we'll be right back. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. And listen, just because Factor meals are quick and easy to make, it doesn't mean they don't taste good. If you're looking for a gourmet meal, Factor's got you covered, and they feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus, and that's just to name a few. In addition to tasting great, one of my favorite things about Factor is that it eliminates the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. All you have to do is heat it up and enjoy a delicious meal. Factor is also tailored to your schedule, so you can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need, and you can pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. In addition to all the great things I just mentioned, the people over at Factor are also celebrating Earth Day all month long, so look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals as well. I love Factor. I think that's pretty obvious. I think you guys will as well. So head on over to factormeals.com/detective50 and use my code detective50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code detective50 at factormeals.com/detective50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I want to thank Factor Meals for sponsoring this week's episode. Let's get back into the case. Okay, so we're back and we just discussed the hammer and the surveillance footage and what it all could mean. What does it tell us about this offender? What type of profile can we derive from these actions that we can see with our own eyes? And I think it shows someone who's a novice and experienced and more than likely didn't go in there with a plan on killing anyone. It evolved into that situation. Now, don't get me wrong. This still means we're dealing with a very dangerous individual. Anyone who can murder someone with a hammer is someone we all have to be aware of, because that's not a person who's in the right state of mind. The ability to go from a burglary to this violent murder in a matter of seconds tells you the type of mentality that we're dealing with here. So again, in no way, shape, or form am I diminishing what happened here. We're dealing with a very dangerous person. Now, the following day, the police released an additional 19 seconds of footage showing the suspect inside the church, moving about, opening doors, and peering inside of them. The police also retracted their earlier statement regarding the suspect's gender, now stating that they could either be a male or a female. The police urged the public to focus on the suspect's walk and their posture to see if they could be identified. And again, we talked about the posture and the walk slightly. Could it be a gait that this person has due to an injury, or could it be because the clothes are too big on them? It could be either. Depending on when I watch the video, I feel differently about it, and I'm sure many of you out there have felt the same. Now, on April 22nd, 4 days after Missy was murdered, the police held another press conference where they released an additional 2 minutes of footage in the hopes of generating new leads. They asked the public to pay attention to the suspect's mannerisms and their walking style. And I think it's important to note that at this stage of the investigation into Missy's murder, the Texas Rangers, the ATF, and the FBI were all assisting in this case. So it really was all hands on deck, and they had all the resources and personnel available to try to solve this case. Over the next few weeks, the police obtained a search warrant from Missy's LinkedIn account and also several people's phone records. The police later released these warrants, which told us quite a bit of new information about Missy's life before her murder. Now, the police found out that Missy and Brandon were having problems in their marriage, partly because Missy had been involved with other people. And Brandon told investigators that he knew about at least one of Missy's affairs. After looking at Missy's LinkedIn account, investigators found out that she was in a romantic relationship with a man that Brandon hadn't mentioned, probably because he didn't know about it. Investigators talked to this man and he confirmed the relationship. The warrant also stated that they searched his phone, but they don't detail what, if anything, was found. The warrants also revealed that less than 3 days before her murder, Missy showed a friend a private message she got on LinkedIn. Now, while the contents of the message have not been released, we know that it was from an unknown male and it was, quote, creepy and strange. Now, I will say I'm a little perplexed as to why this information was released. I don't know how this would assist or jog the memories of the public to help law enforcement solve this case. if anything, there could be individuals out there who judge Missy because of this information, which is not helpful to incentivizing people to come forward or to try to help solve this case. But I feel like this is a situation, and we're going to get into this more, where law enforcement didn't have a ton. So when they found something that was intriguing and could potentially be a motive for someone, they wanted to let the public know that, hey, we are working this case and we are finding new things, even though, in my opinion, I don't know how searching these possible leads, or these possible motives, would be useful for public consumption. I just don't see it. But again, maybe if I was talking to law enforcement, I would feel differently. But if I had been working this case, I don't feel like I would have released this information. Could it be considered guilt knowledge if used later? Yeah, it could have been. It's not now. So for me, I wouldn't have released it. It is an interesting tidbit, and it does give a more fuller perspective of what was going on in Missy's life at the time of her murder. But I don't necessarily know if it's connected. Yes, it needs to be explored, but behind closed doors. Within the investigators' realm of people who are working this case, not necessarily for the public to consume. Now, the investigation into Missy's murder continued, with the Midlothian police doing everything they could think of to solve this case. They even enlisted the help of the NYPD to use their advanced tracking devices, which analyzed signals from cell towers. You see, the police wanted to know if the killer was coming back to the crime scene to admire their work or to see what law enforcement was working on. And if they did, the NYPD could run surveillance and use a tracking device called Stingray. A former police officer and criminal defense attorney told CBS 11 about the Stingray technology. He said, quote, "A phone will automatically connect to the Stingray without any control from the user. It mines data off the phone very quickly." Now, it's unclear if the NYPD was able to uncover anything significant. If they had, nothing has been released, and I completely understand why it wouldn't be released. Now, as far as the Stingray, I've never used a piece of technology like this. It sounds pretty fascinating. I think I have an idea of how it would potentially work. I think it would almost work, I guess, if we were to describe it in a way that most of us would understand, kind of like a Wi-Fi router without a password. So it would be placed in the area of the crime scene, and any cellular devices that came within the vicinity of that Stingray would automatically connect without any permissions or passwords, and it would just constantly download the data from the phones that are connecting to the Stingray. And maybe I'm assuming that it spits out information into some type of Excel sheet or something similar, where they'll be able to see what devices are connecting and how often they're connecting. And maybe based on what he's describing here, maybe it's able to download personal data, maybe search history. I don't know how deep it goes, but it definitely sounds like an interesting piece of technology. I've heard similar stories of different technology, but not at the local level. But again, NYPD is a huge department. I can tell you we didn't have this technology at my police department. And if you did, I would think more than likely we would need some type of search warrant, depending on how intrusive this equipment was. If it's able to access personal data, I don't know, search history, photos, whatever, without the user's awareness of it, I would think there could be some Fourth Amendment concerns there. So I don't know if it goes that deep or just pulling phone numbers and carrier data. If it's just pulling that, I think it's fine, because in order to get more detailed information about those specific numbers, you would have to go to those carriers and have warrants signed and then issued before that data was given over to law enforcement. So more than likely, that's what they were doing, especially if they've released this publicly. And I guess you could see how many times these phone numbers were connecting on a regular basis. And if they had a number pop up that was consistently, you know, being grabbed by the Stingray at random times, maybe that's a number and carrier that they would look into to see who that phone belonged to. But really interesting piece of technology. And it does make me think, even as a civilian now, what is available to our government at the higher levels? What do they have? What access do they have? And I know a lot of you are probably screaming right now, because based on what we do know, they do have the ability to get whatever they want. And the technology is out there. It's not accessible to people like you and I, but it is available, and it is somewhat scary to think of what can be obtained without our knowledge. Now, on May 20th, just over a month after Missy was murdered, the police held another press conference to update the public on the investigation. They talked about potential suspects in the case, stating, quote, "At this point, none of the family, friends, or co-workers of Missy Beavers are considered suspects. Until Missy's killer is caught, I will stop short of saying that any person is absolutely excluded, but to be clear, none of Missy's family are at the focus of this investigation." Now, this was a very important statement by law enforcement because at this point, many people online were blaming Brandon for Missy's murder, even though he wasn't even in the same state when she was killed. But again, them coming out and saying this publicly, I think they were trying to do two things. Put people at ease that, hey, listen, lay off the family members, friends, but also giving themselves an out in case something popped up that was suggestive that one of them were involved. So they were still kind of covered both ways. Now, the police also provided updated information about the suspect. They stated that the suspect's height ranged from approximately 5'2 to 5'7, and they appeared to be light-skinned, although this couldn't be confirmed. Additionally, the suspect made significant efforts to conceal their identity, so the police still weren't sure about their gender. Now, regarding the suspect's physical characteristics, the police noted, quote, "The suspect's feet appear to be turned outward away from the body, more predominantly on the right foot. Investigators are interested in persons who fall within or near this height range and have a similar walk or gait or may have had a similar walk or gait during the time of this offense. It is possible the gait was caused by a temporary condition, injury, or other factor, and the suspect may no longer exhibit this walk or gait." The police further mentioned that they hadn't ruled out the possibility that more than one person was involved, despite only one person being seen on camera. They also said they weren't sure where the suspect purchased the tactical gear because it was readily available and not controlled. In June, things started slowing down in Missy's case. There weren't as many tips coming in, and the media coverage wasn't as frequent. Now, in January of 2017, the police shared new surveillance footage of a silver Nissan Altima near SWFA Outdoors, located about a half a mile from the church, and the car was seen just a few hours prior to Missy's murder. Now, in the surveillance footage, the car is seen slowly driving around the parking lot, and at one moment, the driver switched off their lights and then turned them back on. Now, the police said they didn't think the driver was connected to Missy's murder. However, they wanted to speak to them. And as far as I can tell, the police haven't located the driver of this vehicle yet. One other quick note, when we're talking about proximity, yes, SWFA Outdoors is about a half a mile away from the church, but I can tell you from watching other news coverage on this before recording, from that building, the SWFA Outdoors building, you can see the church clear as day. So I know that law enforcement is saying this individual is not involved, and that may be the case, but it is very interesting considering the timing in which this vehicle was seen, the behavior that was displayed, and the close proximity to the church. So this car would be critical to identify and to speak with the driver. And I will tell you that there was a still released of this car as well. We can probably put this up here where on the back bumper of this vehicle, when they released the still, there appears to be some type of sticker below the license plate. I can't put together what it might be, but maybe one of you out there can. So again, if you are able to identify this vehicle or this sticker that's on the vehicle, please make sure you contact law enforcement. I'll have all that information at the end of the episode. Now in April, 1 year had passed since Missy was murdered, and the police told NBC DFW, quote, "In this case, justice for Missy has been delayed too long." The police also said they were still receiving tips, but they were waiting on that, quote, "vital critical tip" that would break this case wide open. Now, fast forward to 2018, the police held another press conference marking the 2-year anniversary of the case. They mentioned that they were still collaborating with outside help and were following up on leads whenever new technology was available. Now, the investigation continued with few major updates over the years, but in April of 2021, the police made a public announcement to mark the 5th year since Missy's murder. They went on to say that her case still isn't considered cold, as they received new tips and leads almost every day, and they also hadn't ruled out or confirmed any possible motives. The police mentioned that they shared the case with several groups of homicide investigators for their input, but these discussions didn't lead to any significant new information. They also brought on a retired federal agent to work with the team investigating Missy's murder. The police further revealed they obtained a new height analysis for the suspect, which estimated the vertical distance from the floor to the top of the suspect's helmet to be approximately 5'8" tall. Now, this is a decent shift from our original description, which had them between 5'2 and 5'7. Now we're saying it's on the higher end, 5'8". So although many years later, this information is critically important because we're asking the public for help and to look at these videos and think about people in their own lives. And it may be a situation where the individual they were thinking of was closer to 5'8", maybe 6 feet tall. And they said, nah, 5'2", it's too much of a difference. Couldn't be that person. Now, by saying this, it may bring some new potential suspects into the fold. So a 6-inch difference may not seem like a lot, but it could open up a whole new group of suspects. Now, in addition to this new height information, law enforcement again highlighted that the suspect had a distinctive walk with their feet turning outward, specifically their right foot. The police said they were interested in people around this new height range who have a similar walk or may have had one around the time of Missy's murder. Now, since this announcement, there have been few updates in this case, and as of April 18th, 2024, which was just a few days ago, it has been 8 years since Missy was murdered. The police told NBC that they have a detective working full-time on this case and that they are actively pursuing new leads, but unfortunately, that was the only update they provided. Now, Missy's case remains unsolved as of this recording, and her family is still desperate for answers. Okay, so now for my detective perspective on this case, which I've kind of given throughout this episode, which is why it was a little longer, but I liked kind of breaking it down by sections so that we could go over the critical pieces of information and make sure that I didn't miss any at the end. But just to recap, I want to talk about a couple pieces that we touched upon in the show, and the first thing being the hammer. When we think about motive and we think about why Missy was killed, I don't think we have a situation here where there was something going on prior to this incident where it was determined that Missy needed to be removed from this earth. And this was a premeditated murder. It looks to me, based on the behavior of the offender, that this individual went there with the intention on either just breaking into things, walking around, or committing a burglary and actually taking something from the church. But based on how they were conducting themselves, I truly don't even know if they were looking for anything specific. I have had situations, especially with young adolescents, where they break into somewhere just for the sake of doing so, just because it's wrong, and they're just curious as to what's inside. And that's really it. They're not looking to take anything. They just want to break in, and I guess it's like the cool thing to do. I don't know if this person had something against the church or if there was something mentally going on. Again, I wouldn't be surprised based on how they were kind of walking around the building. But it appears to me that they went there with an intention other than killing someone. And that's probably why they went there so early in the morning. I also think that their behavior is not suggestive of someone who's looking to kill someone or has a plan going into it. Because as I said in the show, I think they would have been hiding. I think they would have been looking out the windows and out the doors to see if someone arrived. Their behavior to me suggests that they had no intention or no idea that anyone was going to show up that early in the morning. And as far as the hammer is concerned, as I said earlier, they were using it as a tool to break into different areas of the church. And what I feel happened is that Missy and the offender basically walked into each other unexpectedly by both parties. And in that moment, I don't know if Missy screams or maybe she, who knows, maybe she confronts the person. But either way, this individual who's clearly not in the right mindset uses the hammer to kill her because that's what was in their hand at the time when the incident occurred. I don't think it's anything more than that. As far as the person that we're looking for here, I think this individual is a male, just based on the stature, based on how they're walking. I could see it being a female, but it just doesn't make sense to me. In a crime like this, a burglary like this, more times than not, it is a male individual who commits this type of crime. And there is a couple parts where they're swinging the hammer that makes me think otherwise. But for the most part, I'm 70-30 that this is a male individual. And I feel that the equipment, the tactical gear, was more than likely obtained online at some other point, or maybe even at like a thrift store or something like that, where they purchased this equipment because they had fantasies of being in law enforcement, but for one reason or another could never be hired, right? Maybe it was a mental evaluation that they didn't pass, or a physical evaluation that they didn't pass, maybe due to a disability, and that would explain the walk. But this person had a fantasy of being in a position of authority but could never get there, and maybe that's why they purchased this equipment previously. I don't think it was purchased or borrowed for this specific event, because if it had been, maybe someone in that area would remember it if it was purchased locally. For example, if it was a female who borrowed this oversized equipment from a male, unless it was that person's husband, more than likely they would come forward and say, yeah, so-and-so borrowed this equipment from me a couple days ago, this tactical gear, it's mine, I'm a police officer, and for some reason they said they wanted it for a costume party, but when I saw the video, I knew that was my gear. Now, is there a chance that someone did see that and out of loyalty hasn't came forward? Potentially, but I think it's more likely that you're looking at an individual who had this equipment previously, decided to commit this crime, this burglary, and was looking for something to cover up their identity, and this is the outfit that they came up with. And maybe they found some gratification in it, walking around wearing this, knowing they were going to be seen on camera. And just to touch again on the burglary element of it, again, some people will come back at me and say, hey, Derek, you say burglary, but nothing was taken. Again, the intent could have been to go in there and just damage property, or it could have been to take something. But when this incident took a turn and this individual murdered someone, they decided to leave everything behind and get out of there as fast as possible. That's the simple explanation. And sometimes in these investigations, the simple answer is the right one. So now a couple things of where this investigation can go. And there's a lot of people working on this, and I'm sure most of these ideas have been explored. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of DNA in this case. From what I've learned, what they did find wasn't enough to develop a profile. It doesn't appear that the assailant was injured during this altercation with Missy or while breaking any of the glass, so you don't have a lot of DNA there. They did a good job of covering up their face. I do think it's a good idea to get all cell phone tower data to see what phones were connecting to the nearest cell phone tower during those times, but Midlothian isn't like this desolate area that's not populated by anybody. There's storefronts, there's buildings, there's houses. So there's a lot going on in Midlothian where I'm sure there was a lot of cell phones connecting to those towers at that time. It would almost be physically impossible to go through them all and individually rule out each and every phone number. It's not possible. You can't do it. Unless there was only 20 or 30 cell phones connecting to that tower at that time in that direction of the cell phone, it would be very hard to rule them all out. More than likely, the cell phone data would be supportive of a potential suspect. What I mean by that is if they had someone in mind who they felt was good for the crime, they could see if that individual's cell phone bounced off that tower during the time of the incident, building the case against this person. But do I think the cell phone data would be the start of identifying a potential suspect? No, unfortunately, that's not how it usually goes. And finally, I want to talk about why this case has not been solved to this day, or at least why I believe that it hasn't been solved 8 years later, as we're talking about it a few days after the 8th anniversary. And many of you are not going to like my explanation. In any investigation, especially a homicide, you're looking for individuals who are involved in that victim's life prior to their death. And you'll reverse engineer it, where you go through the victim's cell phone data, their search history, who they've been hanging out with, if they're having relationships with specific individuals, whether it's spouses or someone outside the marriage, anybody who could be potentially connected to this person. And then you look for possible motives with those individuals, why they would want to hurt or kill this person. Once you've explored all of those individuals, you know, people of the church, Missy's spouses, her colleagues, her friends, and all of those individuals are ruled out, it's really hard to go from there. So if you have an offender in this particular case who has no connection to Missy Beavers, and there's a real possibility that they had never encountered each other before this event, then it's going to be very hard to reverse engineer this case and connect it back to them. there might be nothing there. This person might have came into this church without ever being there before and just happened to choose this place for a random reason that none of us can even figure out. So if they've never encountered Missy before this incident, how do you tie it back to them unless they start to talk about it to someone else? If they don't open their mouth and they're the only person who knows what they did, unless they tell someone, they could take that secret to their grave. And unfortunately, I think that's what we might be dealing with here. This individual did not know who Missy Beavers was. They went to the church, they were going to steal something, or they were going to damage the property. Unfortunately for Missy, she showed up at the wrong time, and she was killed because of it. This individual fled the scene and has probably never talked about this incident again. We don't even know if this individual is still alive. But law enforcement officers are not magicians. So if there's no evidence, whether that's DNA or trace evidence or digital data, if there's nothing to connect this person to it other than the video footage that we have, what can they really do? And that's why I think at this point in the investigation, and they have said this publicly, they're still waiting for that critical piece of information that's going to identify the individual involved. And then once they have that person, then they can reverse engineer from this person's background to tie them back to the crime scene. But until they have that name, there's not much they can do. And I know that this revelation can be demoralizing, but that's why we continue to cover these cases. We may not know who this person is today, but we may know who they are tomorrow, and you may be able to help with that. So, if you have any information about this case, you can call Crime Stoppers of Ellis County at 972-937-7297, or you can call the Midlothian Police Department Criminal Investigative Division at 972-775-7634. And by the way, there is a $150,000 reward. As always, I want to send my thoughts out to Missy's family, especially her three daughters, Allie, Sarah, and Hannah. They deserve to know what happened to their mother and to see the person responsible held accountable for their actions. So we're going to continue fighting for them. And as far as this case and this format, please let me know what you think of it. This will not be a normal occurrence, but if you'd like to see me cover some more known cases that are unsolved periodically throughout the year, way down below, whether you're listening on audio or YouTube, let me know your thoughts. I'd love to hear them. But that's going to do it for me, guys. I appreciate you being here. Everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you next week.